Max Armstrong, our great agriculture broadcast legend, joining me now. And Max, it was so great to chat with you on Thanksgiving. It was nice to kind of get a tour of where all of our food comes. Thanks for doing that, and thanks for hopping on again tonight.
Hey, John, I always enjoy being on with you. Thank you for the opportunity.
All right, so it's December 1st. Oh, and I want people, if you got any questions for Max, 312-981-7200. That way I'm not the only one asking questions that make me go, huh, I should know more about this, but I don't. And this is the perfect lead-in, Max, because, you know, it's December 1st. We're in meteorological winter. And I think a lot of people, including myself, I just don't know, what does your typical farmer do during the winter months? Now, I know that probably depends on region, so let's kind of keep it close to us. What are farmers doing now?
Yeah, that's a good question. The old joke is that farmers put their equipment away and go to Florida for the winter. Huh. But in reality, a lot of our farmers are attending meetings. A perfect example, starting either, it's either tomorrow or Saturday, the Illinois Farm Bureau, the largest farm organization of the state, holds its annual meeting at the Palmer House in Chicago. And farmers come in. I think they're having, probably 1,500 or so will come in from all 102 counties of Illinois, and they hold informational meetings. It's kind of the learning season is what I call it, John, because in this next 2-week period ahead of the holidays, and then when you get past New Year's, it's pretty intense for meetings that farmers attend to do a better job of doing what they do. They try to improve their production skills, their marketing skills, how to pass along that family business to the next generation, you know, how to plan for the multi-generational farm to continue, that family farm. And so there's a lot of information to get transferred along. I'm part of what they call the Farm Futures Summit that's coming up next month in Coralville, Iowa, near Iowa City. That's a 3-day meeting. And I'll be handling a panel there with Howard Buffett, a businessman and farmer and philanthropist. And we're going to focus on Ukraine, where he's been doing a lot of work through his foundation. So there's a lot going on in this meeting season.
Is it sharing what worked this past year, new ideas? Is it comparing notes?
All of that. There's a lot of networking that goes on at these winter meetings, as farmers come together from various parts of the country for some of these meetings. For example, that Farm Futures Summit, there will be guys there from California, from Washington State, from North Carolina, and quite often they learn about a problem that's going on in another region, and they can tackle that before it gets to their farm. And so the networking component is very strong in these wintertime meetings. It's not just sitting there looking up at the screen, listening to a speaker. Out in the hallway, they'll exchange ideas, and many of them will follow up later on and stay in contact with each other.
I know that a lot of farms use cover crops, and I went to the University of Illinois, which, of course, is a great agriculture school. I took zero agriculture classes, and honestly, that's a big regret of mine. At least one or two would have been great, but I learned a few things through osmosis just by being there and overhearing and being near the Moro plots, which I'm sure you know what those are, Max, but I did learn a little bit about the usage of cover crops. Can you explain what those are and how prevalent they are in farms near us?
Yeah, it's getting more prevalent, John, as farmers are embracing this. You know, it's a part of regenerative agriculture that's really catching on. I mean, people are talking about it more and more, and I know farmers have been doing it for more than a decade. But basically, you have something out there growing in that field, something out there in that field every month of the year. And it helps improve the fertility of that soil. It really enhances the soil and enhances maybe the opportunity to hold some moisture in there in the next year. You know, a lot of farmers have been using what we call no-till farming in the Midwest for many, many years. After they run the combine through the field, they don't touch it. They leave some of that stubble, that crop residue out there to hold the topsoil in place. That topsoil doesn't blow. It doesn't wash away the way it once did. So farmers have been embracing these various techniques that are environmentally friendly for a long time. They just want government in all of this zeal to do more out there to tackle the environment, to recognize what they have been doing. Mm-hmm. And some of these farmers have practiced all these conservation practices for 20 or 30 years, actually.
Right. I imagine there's such a science behind maybe nutrient exchange, what happens with cover crops, too.
There's a lot of science involved, and farmers are continuing to embrace this, to do a better job, to boost their yields from one year to the next, to try to increase their productivity, and thank goodness they are. I mean, I worry about this a little bit. All of the land that we are paving over, that we're taking out of production. We, I say we, you and I as consumers, need farmers to be able to continue to boost the output of the land they are farming, wherever it may be, because there's less and less land available. So that's why I get a little bit excited about seeing land in the city utilized for crop production. You know, I thought about this 25, 30 years ago. I'd be in a plane flying low over Chicago, and you'd look down and you'd see all of the brown fields,
yeah,
all of these vacant lots where nothing was happening. And, you know, when you see somebody now, as these sisters are, growing crops in a container in the city,
right?
You know, and so many things going on in terms of agriculture. It's not just out on the land of central Illinois. There's a lot of exciting things happening, including in animal agriculture, production of livestock that benefits our lives, too.
Yeah, and I just want to say, I know we've got to take a break here, but Max, you know, there are a lot, and actually, I think in many ways, I've visited a lot of these small farms on the south and the west sides where there have been empty lots for a decade or more, and these nonprofits are going in there to have farms, not only just as a small way to help feed some people in the neighborhood, we're talking about food deserts in some of these neighborhoods, and to teach youth about where their food comes from, but they are getting impressive yields on some of these things, and it's just, it's wonderful to see, and I imagine you'd agree with that, too.
It's adding value to their lives, and it's not just a nutritional thing. I mean, it gives people a sense of value and contributing, and, you know, these are not to be dismissed by any means, these urban farms that we're seeing that, as you pointed out, are helping resolve some of the food deserts. There's one called, what is it? It's the food fridge or something like that.
There's a love fridge. There's a food fridge.
Yes,
there's
love
sisters
fridge,
in the village.
People are getting refrigerators donated, and building owners are allowing them to plug in, and people bring in the food that they can contribute, and others are taking when they need it. And I don't know. I mean, it's easy for people to dismiss that sometimes and say, you know, this doesn't matter. Well, it does in little communities.
Max,
I've been told by people involved it works well.
I went to a fridge at 9 in the morning when someone did a drop-off there in Englewood, and they were plugged into the back of a liquor store, and there was a line of 40 people waiting to get fresh produce on a Friday morning, about 7 in the morning, to bring home for the weekend. I mean, it makes a huge difference. All right, Max, I got to put you on hold. We're starting to get some questions on the line. 630 wants to know, what tractor is Max wrenching on?
Is that wrenching that begins with an R or a W?
It begins with a W. And I'm like, am I missing some inside joke that I've missed out on here?
No, it's but, you know, to the point, I was at the headquarters of Case IH yesterday in Racine, Wisconsin, one of our biggest farm equipment companies, and they are going to be celebrating the anniversary of the Farmall brand in 2023, 100th anniversary. And we recorded a special show that's going to run on our television show New Year's weekend. This week in Agribusiness is our show, and it's seen across the country on local television stations, RFD-TV, and can be seen on websites, too, such as prairiefarmer.com. So we hope folks will tune in for that. There's going to be a lot going on with the red tractors, the Farmall brand.
Prairiefarmer.com. That actually leads me perfectly into this comment we got from the 815, that if you want to see what farmers do all year round, there's so many resources for that. Of course, your show, Max. But there's great YouTube channels. I mean, we are so connected these days that even folks that don't have a green thumb at all could probably get a look and see what farmers do all year round. And I think there is something valuable to that. We've talked about that, Max, about people that never have really ever been spent time on a farm learning a little bit more about it.
Yeah, absolutely. There are some great farmers. The millennial farmer is one who has, gazillions of followers, and he shows what he's doing on his farm. He's in Minnesota, as I recall. The Welker boys up in Montana, great guys, great friends of mine. They do a lot of video work as well on YouTube, and you can see the realities of production and how challenging it is out there. And then we have some, we have a lot of social media stars popping up in agriculture. Young ladies who like to dance in front of the camera and out in their farm fields. They sell T-shirts, but the reality is there's some real good stuff out there
for sure
to show you what's going on in today's farms.
Yeah, I'm sure there are great farmers on TikTok, and there's dancing involved. I'll go take a look at that. Let's get a little news here. I'm curious. You know, we've talked about the Mississippi River. Any changes in that elevation or depth to help grain transport, or is it still a problem?
You know, it has gotten better, and it's going to get better if these forecasts are right for abundant precipitation over the winter. You know, everybody's talking about significant snows and a lot of cold temperatures. Well, eventually, that if we do get that snow, it's going to run off into the rivers, and especially if we get that, you know, through the Missouri Valley up to the north and bring it down through the river system. We pretty much missed the opportunity of exports this fall, though. You know, that dry period when the barges had to be loaded lighter and fewer barges could be moved did rob us of some market share, I think, in competing with South America. And there's no way to get that back in the wintertime. You know, the Mississippi, the Illinois, these navigable waterways, especially if it gets cold and stays cold like this, they're going to freeze over just like Lake Michigan does. So the barges won't be able to move down through the upper Mississippi. It starts to close, you know, as you go south from Minneapolis. Little by little, the river will close up as it freezes.
And when you talk about go ahead.
I was just going to say, I think we've dodged the bullet on a rail strike, which was really taking a wide swipe at A.
Yeah, that's where I was just going to go, and I was just thinking, like, there has not been a transportation industry in the last 3 years that has not seen at least some overhaul or complete stoppage. I mean, whether it was, you know, shortage of truckers we talked about last year, that continues, the river barges. Boy, the railroad strike on top of that would have been something else.
It really would have been, and it needed to be resolved this week, because starting about Sunday, the rail lines would have started to park cars. You know, the shippers would have said, wait a minute, we can't take the chance of this flammable car or this chemical winding up in a neighborhood where it shouldn't belong. It needs to either stay with the shipper or to get quickly to the company that is buying it. So that ripple effect would have started right away, notwithstanding the fact that we would have caused transportation problems on Amtrak, Chicago's metro system, et cetera.
Chat with Max Armstrong. You all know him and love him. American broadcaster of agriculture legend. Okay. Food prices, you know, it's something we've watched for a while. They've been much too high. As inflation cools, there's not going to be some retreat back to the way things were, though, Max. I think that some people are optimistic about inflation overall cooling, but it's not like prices are going to retreat.
You know, it's been encouraging that we've seen a little bit of slippage, you know, compared to a year ago in inflation. But just remember, it's still very robust by what we had come to know. And, you know, if you look around the Chicago area, you still see diesel fuel at almost $5 $5 a gallon. And as you and I have talked on several different occasions, that ripples throughout the entire economy. When you've got $5 diesel fuel, that is a cost that gets passed along in everything you buy in the supermarket and otherwise in retail. So as long as diesel is so elevated, inflation is not going to go away.
Yeah. We got about a minute left. We got a new Chicago Fed president making their way on in. Yeah?
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. You know, he's from the University of Chicago. Everybody knows him. You know, he was a little bit off base on inflation, saying I think he was one of those in the transitory camp, and as we found, that has not been the case. But, you know, the jury is still out. He'll have this job for, another 12 years until he retires at the age of 65.
Austin Goolsbee, which is a really cool name to say.
Isn't it? Hi, I'm Austin Goolsbee, and I have news for you.
It's a really good 1940s radio name.
It's almost as bad as Max Armstrong.
It's worked out okay for you, Max.
Hi, I'm John Henson.
Yeah, you know, I don't mind mine. It turned out okay. Austin Goolsbee starts on January 9th. Okay. Max Armstrong, it's always great to chat with you, catch up with you. We'll do it again soon, okay, my friend?
Take care of yourself, John. Have a great holiday season, pal.
You too. And you can always call in with answers to the question of the day if you ever got one, Max.
I won't.
Take care.